Why, hello and welcome. Welcome to the Peer Pressure Podcast. I am Diane, sometimes known as Diane Kamikaze, and I am your host. The reason why I do this podcast is because I like to say I am a champion of heavy music. I've always found my favorite songs since I was a young kid had riffs, hooks, were either metal, hardcore, hard rock, or punk, or something fairly aggressive in attitude and sound. And I am all about appreciating the people that keep that world going, whether they're musicians, webmasters, other podcasters, record label and festival owners. It's important to me to recognize what these people do in that realm of music. So, I am here to bring them to you in a different context, more than a Wikipedia entry or a press release, a little more personal and a lot more fun. I'm a rocker for life, and I hope these episodes do make a difference. Send me feedback at diane@wfmu.org, and my Facebook page is Diane Kamikaze Farris, Rocker for Life. Like my page there, and I will keep everybody updated on podcast episodes in that space. Thanks so much for listening, and stay tuned. So welcome to part two of the Dr. Chud interview. If you did not check out part one, please do. And the conversation jumps around a little bit because there was a playlist originally tied in with the program, which was July 10th, 2014. Feel free to go back to the WFMU archives and listen to the show in its entirety. So we didn't, I edited out some of the specific descriptions about songs, and our conversation does jump because of that. But we're talking about music, and Dr. Chud really has a lot to offer. We go into this part of the interview talking about 1975 and his growth as a drummer, and we go on from there. Thank you so much to Dr. Chud for coming to FMU. He was really a fabulous guest, and his website is drchud.com. Check it out.
Yeah, that was the end of my innocence, I think. Bass City Rollers, after buying every Partridge Family record, every Bass City Rollers record, then came 1976 and everything changed. I think that was the greatest year ever in music. I was 12 years old, and my brother was into Queen, and Night at the Opera came out in 75, and he was playing it in 76. I heard Death on Two Legs for the first time. And I was like, oh my God.
Yeah.
And it was over. It was like the guitar was so evil. He swore in the song for the first time. I heard a swear word like from an artist. Then after that, I remember buying the Kiss originals. It was a three-packet set that sold the first Kiss album, second Kiss album, and third Kiss album all together.
Really? I don't remember that at all.
A lot of people don't. We should have known right there what we were in for with Gene Simmons. But
right.
he sold all three albums together. You had to buy them all. And it was called The Originals. It was awesome. I got it for Christmas, I think, in 76. And that was my beginnings of the theatrical kind of makeup type thing. And then my brother took me to say same year, I think The Song Remains the Same, which was the Led Zeppelin movie. And oh my God, that's it. I wanted to play drums for the rest of my life.
Well, and then we talked off mic about the Wings selection. We just heard the live Venus and Mars rock show, right, in terms of who was drumming there.
Right. I didn't like all the Wings albums. I just loved Wings Over America. I played that religiously every day after school. I think it was just the fact that the drummer was so great and it was live, and the feel of that record was so beautiful. Every single song was beautiful. And I love Paul McCartney's writing. If I was on an island all alone and I had to pick one person whose music I had to listen to, it would probably be Paul McCartney music.
Wow.
Yeah.
And we were talking while this song was on, and there really are some very heavy parts in there that are sort of led by the drums.
Yes. Joe English was the drummer on that record. Solid as a rock.
And were you listening to things like with a drummer's ear at that age, or was it just sort of making sense to you at the time?
I always listen to music from the drummer's perspective, and I never listen to the words. I don't know why. Some people do. I'm the guy that listens to the music. I don't know. Mm-hmm. So, and then I love listening to great drummers because, I hope we don't lose that stuff. Technology, you know.
I
love the way things were recorded back in the 70s. I think that was the best time where you got everything was really organic and still not bombarded by technology yet.
And
so.
Who do you think is the greatest drummer of all time?
that's me.
All right, then.
I love John Bonham. Mm. I loved Alex Van Halen. I loved Keith Moon. And I went through so many phases trying to learn as much as I can about drums. I went through all the jazz drummers, all the blues.
Did you have any jazz education or jazz
background? I studied under a big band teacher named Sonny Igo.
He's a big really?
Yes.
Oh, my God. Totally know Sonny Igo.
Yeah.
Wow. That's a New Jersey thing.
I met him through his son who marched into Bridgman.
Oh, wow.
So that's how that came about. I studied with him, which was reading charts and big band stuff. Mm-hmm. That was great. Max Weinberg from Springsteen's band used to take lessons before me. Same teacher.
Really? So you would pass?
Yeah.
Yes.
Who else? I just tried to learn as much as I can about drums, so I understood the language.
And that is why you do what you do, which is...
Right.
Because you have been in... I have a list. I don't know if it's a complete list of all the bands that you've been in, which is... Dan Kidney and the Pulsations, Pacific Ocean, Sardonica, Sacred Trash, The Misfits, Graves. You work with Joey Ramone, The Sonic Creeps, Doyle. And then, of course, you are Dr. Chud's ex-ward and Gorgeous Frankenstein. I remember the band Dan Kidney and the Pulsations, but I remember the name. I don't know if I ever saw them or anything, but I definitely knew. And I don't know their stuff. I mean, was that... More.
It's not online. It's nowhere to be found. Yeah. I did bring two CDs, though.
Oh, good.
So maybe we'll listen to a track or two I never heard before. Mm-hmm. Unless you were there.
I mean, with all this, with all the types of music and all the different bands that you've been in, did you feel like a chameleon at any point, sort of like not finding your own style and working for others? Or how does that work as a drummer?
That's a good question. It was the nature of being a drummer. I mean...
Well, and you studied so many varieties of schools of drumming.
Yeah.
So it's almost like you prepared yourself for anything.
Right. I had that 10-year period where I just threw everything at the wall and see what stuck, you know? One of the first things my teachers taught me was, you know, after I'm done teaching you everything today, go home, practice it, and then when you go join a band, forget everything I taught you. Just forget everything and don't worry about it. Anything that you absorbed will come out.
Yeah.
So I took that approach. I learned all I can. And then once I hit like a live rock scene club circuit, I was off. And I just played rock and roll the rest of my life.
There you go. But you had no idea that was going to happen.
No, so I don't know what I was doing. I was doing Broadway. I was doing...
Were you doing Broadway?
I do off-Broadway, like lounge stuff. I was doing all kinds of crazy stuff. Yeah, it's nuts. I was trying everything.
What shows were you in the orchestra? Is that kind of how that works on off-Broadway?
Like lounge stuff, like off-Broadway lounge stuff, really, really seedy stuff.
CD is good. Well, that prepared you for
yes.
the rock world, too.
Yes, it all does. It all does. Okay, so there I was. My brother's like, hey, you want to go see a rock movie? It's called Song Remains the Same. And I'm like, oh, all right. And I just heard the Queen album. And so we took a van. It was like 10 of us, all his, my older brother's friends, stuffed in a van. We went to an outdoor theater, and they had beer. They had a case of beer. We all went on the roof of the van, and I got my mind blown away watching these guys. Heavy metal. That's how excited I was. Oh, yeah, just man. 1976. No. So much creativity going on during that time with music. Oh, man. All kinds of stuff. So yep, much. Rocks was a great record.
And absolutely.
I played that every day after school. And that was 76. When it was an explosion for me for really learning about good hard rock music. And then came 1977.
Yes. And so what happened to you in 1977?
77 to 87 was a total experimental stage for me, trying to learn as much as I can for about drumming and music.
Mm-hmm.
So I went through a lot of changes. But in 77, I started getting into the Police and Blondie, Cheap Trick.
Now, did you, as a drummer, did you love the Police because of the reggae edition? Like this, because it was clearly not rock drumming.
Like, no, was that? No, but he had a great attitude. Yeah, I listened to it because drums was different. It was difficult. It was a challenge. You know, you as a drummer, you dabbled in that, in the reggae stuff, just for the hell of it. And he was a great punk drummer, too. So, mm-hmm. Great band. Police, yeah, Blondie, I loved Blondie. So the punk new wave stuff that was happening then, you know, I got into all that. And then 1980-81 came down the road, and I started getting into weird progressive stuff from Rush to Genesis.
What did you think of Phil Collins as a drummer?
Thought he was the best at that time. And I'm not talking about, like, I know, like, Duke came out during that time, and that was a great record, but I was listening to the Genesis stuff from 1969, 72, 73.
Nursery Crime and Foxtrot. Yeah. And, you know, The Lamb Lies Down on Broadway.
Those albums are great drum records. Some best drumming I've ever heard. So, you know, you listen to that stuff to learn what he was doing at the time. And then when he came out as a singer, you know, he kind of put the drums on the back burner, so you didn't really worship him that much as a drummer anymore, but you worship them old records. He's a great songwriter too.
Well, and because he was singing also, their drumming totally shifted. Did he continue drumming? I don't even know if he was drumming when he shifted to singer.
He probably was still doing the drum tracks,
but not in the same way.
Right, exactly. But you know, that's where he was in his life.
Right.
You know, he did the records that were, you know, difficult. Playing records, he did all that stuff. It's all there. Thank you, Phil. And you know, if he wants to come out and sing some songs and relax, that's fine. That's where he is in his life. He did it all. It's great, great career. Yeah.
And then at what era? Because now we're in sort of like the 77 era. When did you really start getting in bands? And
1980, 1979, 80. I started getting into bands. We would do covers. You know, the Stones, the Cars, Smoke on the Water. Everybody played Smoke on the Water.
Of course.
God damn it. I can never, you know, my neighbor had a band, and that's all he would play all day.
Really?
That's all they play. And
well, do you remember the TV show Rock School? Did you ever see that?
No.
Oh, it was a Channel 13. It was a PBS thing, and they had pros teaching their instruments, but Ian Pace from Deep Purple was the one who did the drum section from Rock School. It was awesome, actually.
I love lefty drummers. Phil was a lefty drummer, Phil mm-hmm. Collins. Mm-hmm. Ian Pace
mm-hmm.
was a lefty drummer. I love lefty drummers.
Are you a righty or a lefty?
I'm a righty.
You're a righty. Would you switch? Do you know any lefty drummers who set up lefty but who are righty? Like,
there are a few out there. Yeah. Like Simon Phillips, I think, does that.
Really?
Yeah, he's great.
Yeah.
He is an ambidextrous kind of guy. Yeah, there's a few of them out there. Eh, what are you going to do? I was born a righty, plain old righty.
That's okay.
Yeah, so 77 to like 80, it was like punk, new wave, and experimental with the progressive stuff. Started studying drums, started taking lessons, joined the drum corps in 84, and I started playing clubs consistently, like 86, 87, three nights a week. 88, I was full-time drummer. And in Dan Kennedy and the Pulsations, we played three nights a week. Johnny Dirt was our manager.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. From the Dirt Club. And that was good times.
What kind of words of wisdom would Johnny Dirt give you?
Oh, my God.
The first time I met him, I was in a band and we played at the Dirt Club. And the first time I met him, he was lying in the speaker, in the bass bin, and the PA was on. He was in the bin.
I'm like, of course.
Hi, thanks for letting us play. Oh, my God, who was this guy?
He would say, it's all about the slime.
And did he mean the literal slime? He did his thing about swimming in the Passaic River and
all
that.
Yeah, he dove in the slime.
Yeah.
He lived for the slime. I don't know why. But, yeah, he lived it, man. He was the greatest club owner ever.
He did, and he actually did really, he did sort of gravitate around, like, the dirt and slime, like, everything
that was. He sold
the
dirt at the club.
Yeah, like, everything that was unsavory.
Yes.
Let's say.
Yeah, organic.
Yeah.
He loved original music, and.
He did.
That's all, every single night you saw six bands, original bands, play his club, like, every single night. How awesome is that? Great PA. It was a great bar.
So Dan Kennedy and the Pulsations played at the Dirt Club?
Yeah, we played a lot there. Mm-hmm. We were like the house band there for at least a year.
That's probably why I at least remember the name. I don't think I ever saw you guys, but...
Yeah, we packed them in, a couple hundred a night. It was awesome.
Mm-hmm. We have a question from a listener. Is there any type of musical project that you haven't done that might surprise people that you want to do since you're known for heavier and rock stuff?
Yeah, I'm going to do... Before I die, I'd like to do like a spooky orchestral album.
Mm.
I've been writing it for so long. It's just I have a grand piano at home, and I'm always writing on it, and I store all the stuff away that I want to come out one day, you know? Just something different. I'm going to call it Dr. Chud's Dead Symphony. Okay. It's going to be a little cute little story.
Awesome.
I don't know. That's different. Maybe I'll write a children's book.
A children's book?
Chudkin. Chudkins everywhere. I love bands that have female singers. I don't know why. It's awesome. From Karen Black to Zombina and the Skeletons.
Oh, that's right. That's how Skeleton. I met you. I told you about the interview with Kembra.
Yeah, I listened to that. It was good.
Yeah. So,
Parallel Lines, I remember listening to that album every day back in 77, 78, after school.
The Web of Dharma Graves CD.
Yes, 2002.
And you recorded the whole thing?
Yes, I produced that record. Recorded it in my house. I think I recorded the drums in the studio, but the rest I recorded in my house.
That was kind of early for like sort of home recording projects. So you had a little leg up there.
I did a Misfit live record in my bedroom, the Evil Live 2.
Really?
Yeah, I did that in my bedroom, Creepy Attic. Yeah, it was really early.
Wait,
on
was
with
Creepy
the computer.
Attic the name of your studio?
It was my room in my parents' house where I grew up, and had all my recording equipment there. When I joined the Misfits, I was still living there, and I was tinkering. I was already long into tinkering with audio recording. So it was 98, and I've been recording Misfit shows that I was playing for the last couple of years, and decided to mix a little live recording and hand it off to Jerry. Yeah, it was like 98. I recorded a Misfit record and mixed it in my bedroom. Creepy Attic. And nice. Yeah, Graves record too. I did that in my new house, the Graves record.
And that one's out of print.
Yes, that's out of print.
Mm-hmm.
Dan Kinney, yeah, it was my first hard-working rock band.
And how many records...
We did three records. I was playing with them for 8 years. We played everywhere. We had a good following. It was fun. Those were some fun years. So that's a lot of years we just went through right there. But we're talking about 1988 to present. Drum Tracks.
Yes.
My favorite drum tracks. That was on. And I got to say, I think Joey Ramone's solo record, his only one he released.
That's a great record.
I love that record. Yeah. I'm on the track 1969, and it was a pleasure working with that great man.
When did you actually record this? I'm looking at the dates of this record. Let's see.
That came out in 2001. Mm-hmm. I think he died that year. We recorded it in like 2000.
Okay.
99 maybe.
Was it on the shelf or was it really sort of a work in progress, but that he just had?
No, it was a legitimate release he made. Mm-hmm. He did everything himself, the way he wanted it. I think they released another record later on after he died, so there might be another record out.
How was he to work with?
Oh, great. He was great. He was probably the best singer I ever played with. Mm. The dude never went out of tune. Oh, my God. He was a great singer, great person. Yeah. The king.
Our own little punk king. So Sonic Creeps is who?
Yes. It's a horror punk band from Baltimore, Maryland.
Oh, cool.
I played on the whole record, and it's going to be released in like 2 months. Every song on that record's great.
Did you record the record too?
I did nothing but play drums, which is rare. I had nothing. You know, I did later on sit in on the mixing a little bit just to make sure the drums sounded really good. Mm-hmm. That's about it. I let them, you know, it's their first record. I let them learn all they can on their own, you know, instead of going in there and saying do this and do that, you know. I just played the drums, and the songs were there, so there wasn't much to do. It's good album.
Yeah, and sometimes you need to leave people
right
doing their own thing.
Yes.
You know.
Good drummer, always.
Let them muddle through.
Yeah.
Awesome.
Knows when to say when.
The Dr. Chud doll is staring at me.
Ah!
So you got to tell me about the occasion that, you know, like, it's a very well-sculpted doll that stands. Like, he's a solid.
I
expect nothing less from you in terms of, like,
right.
construction and the kinds of things that you like, make your own drumsticks and customize your drums. It's like, of course, this doll stands on its own.
Right.
It's not a flimsy bobblehead.
No.
This doll actually has, like, a metal neck.
It's going to kick the butt off a lot of dolls.
Mm-hmm.
Don't get in its way.
So what was the thought in doing a doll, and how can people get them?
I don't know. I like dolls. I like to have a doll of me. Everybody wants a doll of themselves, I guess. I don't know. I don't really like dolls. I was more into baseball cards, but it was cool to have a doll made. I mean, why not? I mean, the Misfits, they made like 3 of them, but they didn't make no drummer, so I had to fill the void. That's
right.
All.
Oh, is that true?
Yes.
They didn't
yes.
make a drummer.
They made
doll.
They made the guitar players and singer, but they didn't make no drummer. So.
So you made your own.
I made my own. You know, if you want anything done in this life, you got to do it yourself.
Indeed, and you have done certainly.
Yes.
Quite a bit.
I'm not done yet. I got a long way to go.
I know. So what is next for you?
I want to do another X Ward record. I love writing, and people have been asking for it for a long time. I made one in 2004, but I want to do that. Maybe I'll do another Doyle record. Smith's Fits from 1999, or I think 2000 album called Cuts from the Crypt. I was kind of against this record.
Huh? Why?
It was like a fill the contractual agreement type album. I didn't want it to be released. I wanted to write a fresh new album. This was like kind of put together with demos and stuff. I mean, we recorded a couple new tracks. They came out great. But I really wanted a real another studio album. But
because there's demo versions from...
Yeah, some were made in my room.
From American Psycho on here.
Yeah, made in my bedroom and stuff. But
I have heard that, like, out there, Misfits Talk Land,
yeah.
that these sound better. People like some of these better in some ways than how American right. Psycho sounds. Oh, did you ever meet Basil Gogos?
Yes.
The
of course.
He did 2 of your great album covers.
Yes.
And he's an amazing painter.
Yes. Well, I can't believe I have artwork done by him.
I know. What did you really get to hang out with him? What was your
just at conventions. We went to his house, I think, once.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
You were fortunate to have him illustrate 2 covers
yes,
for you.
That's great.
That is really cool. Did you just have, did you give him, because one, it is a photo, it's a painting of you, of the band.
Yes.
And then the other one is the Crimson Ghost. Did you give him a photo of the band, or did he actually want you to sit or like look at you, or how does he do that?
I think he had a photo.
Yeah, I mean, just a legend in terms of, I mean, he did all those famous monsters covers and all that. Just really a legendary artist.
George Romero, I worked with. He was another legend.
Oh, right, you and Bruiser.
Yeah. And he did our music video.
Right.
I had makeup done by him.
Oh.
So I was a zombie.
You're just rubbing shoulders with
yes.
everybody.
I was a George Romero zombie in my life. That was awesome. And it was for the album, it was for the movie Bruiser that was by George Romero.
DrChud.com, right,
yes.
is where we can find out everything about
everything,
you. If you want to take a look at that Dr. Chud doll,
yeah,
he's up there.
It's awesome.
And thank you very much just for coming and for the music and for the stories. I mean,
all right.
just all over the place. And the, you know, the rich history of New Jersey rock and punk, you know, as told through you. So it's a real treat. And thank you for making the effort and coming down.
Thank you, Diane. It was my pleasure.
Yay. Mine, too.
Anything for a fellow drummer.
Thank you, Dr. Chud. Please support him. Here we go. Yes. And that concludes another podcast episode. Thank you so much for tuning in. More on the way. I am Diane Kamikaze. Check my Twitter and my Instagram. Handle is one word, Diane Kamikaze. Kamikaze ends with an E. On Facebook, you can find me as Diane Kamikaze Farris, Rocker for Life and Making a Difference. The full link to my index of shows and podcasts can be found on wfmu.org/playlists/DK. That's a capital D and a capital K. I'm going to be working on encore presentations, and I've got years of interviews and podcasts. So if there's something that you'd like to see reposted that you missed, please get in touch. Send me email, diane@wfmu.org. And be sure to subscribe to the show. And if you like it, please rate it and review it. Wow. WFMU. Peer pressure. Thank you. See you next time.